Are dreams reality and reality is dreams? Could I live in space if I got really good at holding my breath? Answers to these questions and more on this episode of This Paranormal Life! Welcome back to This Paranormal Life. This is the weekly comedy podcast where every Tuesday we investigate a different paranormal case and decide within the hour if it's truly paranormal or not. As always, you are joined by myself, Mr. Kit Greer Mulvenna, this guy across from me, Mr. Roy Powers. How are you doing today, Roy?
I'm doing great, Kit. Very interesting intro questions right off the bat. A lot of my knowledge of space and what happens in space does come from children's cartoons. And I would love to know how much of it is real. For example, if you take your helmet off in space, does your head inflate like a balloon before exploding?
Yeah, was that in cartoons? I mean, it seems too violent, doesn't it?
But I think it is.
It's in my
memory.
Yeah, as well.
Why was that a thing? They would always take off their helmet, and they would turn into a balloon animal, and then burst into a ball of flesh.
I just think the problem is breathing, right? What is space if not up water, up sea?
Okay, but I think there's
so it's
also
a bit like
there's also dangerous
the same
levels
way that
of
I
radiation.
Just have to, sorry, I'm just trying to get the thought out here. In the same way in the same way that one must learn as a child to swim in the ocean, one must also learn to live in up water.
Yeah. I just wanted to go on record and say that it's not obviously just holding your breath. I think, you know, being up in space, you're exposed to dangerous levels of radiation.
Get a good tan, though.
There's no atmosphere up there. So, I mean, the pressure alone.
I think atmosphere is overrated, to be honest.
All right, but I'm just saying, if you think you're going to be okay up there because you can hold your breath. I've seen you hold your breath before, by the way. You didn't make it more than 17 seconds.
Yeah, well, I have asthma,
before you
collapsed. But I really think that the asthma will dial back a little bit once I'm basking in all that solar radiation kicking back on the rings of Pluto.
Pluto doesn't have rings. Saturn has rings.
Well,
learn one thing about space before you go up there, all right?
The crisp white sands and pure waters of Pluto. Am I thinking of the Caribbean?
I've seen you almost drown in down water, in earth water.
Yeah, well,
so
no,
you don't need to be going up.
I didn't
to
say
up
I
water.
Could swim.
All right.
I really think I'll be able to swim better in up water.
Okay.
I think we're good. This is besides
exactly.
the point. On this episode, we're going to dive right into a huge investigation. So thank you right off the bat to Tammy Nichols for sending this one in to thisparanormallifepodcast@gmail.com.
Thank you, Tammy.
We're in Aberfan, Wales, about half an hour from Cardiff.
We're in New York. I don't know where that is.
Are you questioning my pronunciation of these authentic Welsh place names that I couldn't be bothered to look up?
I think you're doing a good job.
We're about half an hour outside of Cardiff. The date is October 21st, 1966. Though the mining industry is in steep decline, still 8,000 residents of Aberfan are employed at Merthyr Vale, a 100-year-old coal mine. Wales probably isn't the country to not care about the pronunciation of. Probably any other country that we've been to, like South America, in Asia, people don't expect us to know it, but I feel like Welsh people might care.
Yeah, we're kind of obliged. I'll get my Welsh colleague Gav to dub in some of these names.
Oh, shit.
In post. You guys sound kind of alike.
People go about their business as usual. The miners are working in the pits, children safely at school. As far as everybody knows, a completely normal day is about to unfold. But this day was about to be anything but normal. Meanwhile, 160 miles away in London, dance teacher Kathleen Middleton awakes with a start. She gasps for breath, feeling as if the walls were closing in. She can't shake the horrid feeling as she sits at the breakfast table. Her lodger, Alexander, strolls into the kitchen, stifling a yawn after finishing his overnight shift at work. He notices she seems a bit off.
Morning, Miss Middleton. Is everything okay?
Just a bad dream.
Not another one of those visions of yours.
You see, Kathleen Middleton has a habit of seeing into the future.
A habit?
She hasn't. Well, yeah, it's like a little fun little hobby on the side.
What? Is it by choice or is it just kind of thrust upon her?
Well, she couldn't shake the horrid feeling of dread gasping for breath at the breakfast table, so probably not by choice. She hasn't worked as a psychic or ever publicly shared her gift, but throughout her 52 years, she experiences headaches before things happen. Information about impending disasters just occasionally pops up in her head.
I hope not. This one was really bad. I need a cuppa.
Blimey, you never have tea. You must be rattled.
Within the hour, it becomes clear that Kathleen's gut is correct. One of the country's worst mining disasters is about to strike. After weeks of rain, the piles of coal dust on top of the hill above the town are heavily saturated. At about 9 o'clock that morning, 150,000 tons of built-up coal waste starts to slide down the hill towards the town at a frightening pace.
Whoa.
It moves too quickly for the town to evacuate, and it eviscerates everything in its wake. The sound is like a roaring jet engine. The landscape is decimated, and entire buildings are swallowed by the avalanche of coal dust that had been building up on top of the mountaintop for decades.
My God!
Pipes burst and start flooding the valley. Every able-bodied person in the village swarms to free the people trapped under the debris. People comb through the rubble with their bare hands. Soon bulldozers are mobilized and silence falls as rescuers strain to hear the survivors. Residents of surrounding towns hear the news and rush to lend a hand. Phone lines jam as so many people offer help in any way they can. Requests for rubber gloves turn up thousands of pairs. A fundraising campaign over the coming weeks draws in millions in donations. But despite the massive efforts, 144 people die in the disaster.
Holy shit! This is pretty dark for a This Paranormal Life episode.
Sometimes reality is dark.
I did an episode a couple weeks back on the Lizard Man, and I thought that was edging maybe, you know, in a little too real of a territory. I thought that was a little intense.
A couple episodes ago, you suggested we move to Chernobyl.
That was for a mine. That was to go live in a mine.
Okay.
That was for our own good. That wasn't for a dark reason.
So that mining disaster was fine for you, but this mining disaster is too dark? Pretty crazy. I didn't really know much about the history of this disaster. Truly a tragic moment in British history. Here is, just for reference, a picture of the village, and you can see the pretty conspicuous mounds of coal above the town and then the trail of coal down towards the town.
Wow, yeah. This thing, it looks like a volcano went off, essentially, and like seeped down into the town. How is this not addressed sooner, to have this giant pile of coal building up right on top of the mountain above a town? My God, like, once you see what happened here, it feels like it was probably pretty preventable.
Sadly, very true. Among the hundreds of volunteers is 42-year-old psychiatrist John Barker. When he arrives, the emergency responders are still digging through the rubble. He begins striking up conversations with locals, trying to keep their spirits up. He's comforting a young mother, Mrs. Davies, when she tells him a strange story.
You're going to think I'm crazy. I shouldn't be telling a psychiatrist this of all people. But I can't shake this thought.
What's that?
Last night, my 8-year-old Paul was drawing. I popped my head over to see what he was drawing, and I thought it was the strangest thing. A picture of a huge group of people digging at the bottom of a hill. At the bottom of the page were two words. The end.
John mulls this over as he walks around and speaks to others, but is again shocked when he speaks to the mother of 10-year-old Errol Jones. She recalls that the day before the disaster, her daughter looks up and says, "Mummy, let me tell you about my dream last night." Mrs. Jones is wrapped up in her housework. "Darling, I've no time. Tell me again later." "No, Mummy, you must listen. I dreamt I went to school and there was no school there. Something black had come down all over it."
Kids are so creepy.
John Barker can't believe what he's hearing. What are you thinking if you're John at this point? You just came to help out in this terrible tragedy, and at least two parents immediately confide in you that their children psychically predicted this event.
If I ever have a kid and I wake up one morning, we're down at the dinner table, and the kid goes, "Oh, Papa, I must tell you about my dream last night." And I go, I'm late for work. I can't really do it right now. And
Papa.
The kid goes, "But Papa, you must hear it." I'm like, well, now I absolutely don't want to hear it, because it's going to be something
good.
Weird. You're
good.
A weird little kid. And I didn't want to say this in front of your mother, but you scare me sometimes. I've seen the drawings of the darkness, writing "the end," signing it off with "the end." I don't want to hear it. I think maybe it's something that will change when I have a child of my own. But I know. I would find this so creepy.
To be fair, you're just scared of children, full stop, right?
Non-stop, yeah. And I got a whole bunch of the little bastards. So you'd think, you know, you'd think I would have gotten used to it by now, but it's borderline a horror game every night when they stay over.
Which is like, is messed up because you did work in Disneyland for a while. Why you applied for that job is beyond me.
Yeah, well, it was like, I thought it would be, you know, when you're afraid of spiders, they say the best thing to do is like cover yourself in spiders.
No one says that.
So I'm afraid of children and talking mice.
Okay, I think we better stop not before you incriminate yourself.
I couldn't make it 5 minutes into Ratatouille without freaking the fuck out. Children and talking mice are the most terrifying two things on this earth.
Horror movies are relaxing to me. It's fucking wholesome stuff that's terrifying. Children, puppies, falling in love. That's really scary. Because what's more scary than opening up to people?
Luckily, he isn't just a psychiatrist. John is a paranormal enthusiast in the middle of writing a book about people that can predict the future. He's most interested in investigating people who know that they're going to die. So immediately after visiting Aberfan that day, John writes a paper for Britain's Society for Psychical Research, which we've talked about many times in the past. I still don't really know what these guys do. But
I feel like psychiatrist / paranormal enthusiast is a bad career combination.
Oh, God.
That's like being policeman / criminal. Those are two very contradictory things. You shouldn't be trying to understand the human mind and also think that ghosts are real.
Like,
you're not going to get a lot of help from the man that thinks the problem might be there's a demon in your ass.
If I, as, say, for sake of argument, a depressed person, and I look through the yellow pages and find, oh, great, there's a local psychiatrist to me, John Barker. He sounds like a respectable gentleman. And
good
then
name,
I
yeah.
go to the office and, hey, I had an appointment with Dr. Barker.
Yep. Come on in. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, hi. Nice to meet you. My name's Craig.
Pleasure. If you just like to take a seat here on the couch.
Yeah. I'd love to.
Just relax. You know, I like to just get into these things in a very informal manner. It's your first time, you know, we don't want to open up too much, so.
Sure, because I do feel, you know, like this is the first time I've ever talked to a psychiatrist, so I guess I feel like a little in the dark and a little worried maybe about the process. So.
Of course, yeah, well, there's nothing to be worried about. Speaking of the dark, though, the dark arts specifically, have you ever participated in the dark arts?
That was an incredibly pregnant pause. No.
All right, that's great.
I'm way too anxious to be, you know, messing around with the dark arts or whatever, so.
Okay, that's good to know. If you take a seat on the couch, you didn't
sit down
on the
couch.
Sorry. I'm just looking at my notes here. I'm just drawing a crucifix on my page. Tell me about your childhood. Was your father a man?
He was.
Good to know.
He is a man, yeah. I had great parents growing up.
Do you ever see them pass through a wall? Did their feet touch the ground? Did they have feet?
Does my father have feet?
Was your house underground growing up?
What are you getting at?
Did you open the door just then or did you float through it? I wasn't paying attention.
I'm starting to feel anxious right now. Can we put a pin in this? You lock the door. I've got you cornered. You ghost.
You're going to want to take two of these, pulls out a double barrel shotgun.
Holy! he turns into a ghost, floats through the door.
I knew it!
That's right. So John writes a paper for Britain's Society of Psychical Research, an organization entirely dedicated to investigating the paranormal. He announces that he intends to compile people's premonitions of this disaster to see if anyone truly predicted what was going to happen. Word of this reaches the local papers and towns around the area, and immediately people start writing into John.
I'm looking forward to seeing the scope of this. You know, was it just a thought, or was it, as we have seen before, more drawings or premonitions in that sense?
Yeah, that would be interesting because, you know,
hindsight's 20/20. It's really easy for people to go, yeah, no, I had a bit of an upset stomach the morning of. It's easy to kind of put that in your mind that you felt that way beforehand. Yeah. But if there's some physical evidence, like the kids had, that's some interesting stuff.
In total, 76 people around the country wrote to Dr. Barker to say they predicted the coal slip in one manner or another. He replied to around 60 of these people and started driving around the country visiting those that seemed most promising. He was astonished at what he heard. 2 days before the accident, a Lancashire man dreamed about buying a book from a machine with the word Aberfan on it.
which he had never heard of before. A woman at a religious meeting in Plymouth had a vision of a small school, a Welsh miner, and an avalanche of coal hurtling down a mountainside towards a floppy-haired boy. So pretty...
That's very vivid.
Pretty black and white. Yeah. More than, the book with the name of the town on it. She claims that she told 6 people about her vision before it came true. When all said and done, John is most intrigued by the 7 correspondents who had physical symptoms, like Kathleen Middleton, the woman from the very beginning of our story. He develops a theory that some people have a medical condition called pre-disaster syndrome, and that it could be as common as being left-handed. John decides the most sensible thing to do is to establish the British Premonitions Bureau, with the help of the science editor of the Evening Standard newspaper. A year-long experiment to collect people's premonitions in the name of science.
Wow, so we're talking about a team here, similar to the Avengers, that can't do anything to solve the problems that are happening, but they might be able to tell everyone that they're about to happen.
It's like if the Avengers was made up of guys like Bruce Banner, but they couldn't turn into the Hulk.
Right.
Just scientists,
yeah. So, they call a big meeting together. They're like, Mr. President, in about 12 months, Thanos and his Starfleet are going to engage on warfare all across of New York City. Half of humanity are going to disappear in the snap of a mighty finger. They're like, oh my God, what are you going to do?
Me?
What do you mean me? What am I going to... I just told you the thing's going to happen. I'm done.
I wrote the paper.
Are you gonna do? You're the president.
I'm going on annual leave tomorrow. I busted my ass to get this report ready.
Break his fingers or something. We have no idea.
You called yourself the Avengers. I thought you were gonna do something.
Yeah, you need. That's a separate team. That's
why the do you have a stealth jet?
it's valuable in a different sense.
It is. John decided that responses will be rewarded for accuracy, timing, and unusualness. John saw in the future a database for the entire world's psychic visions that could be used to stop bad things happening. He said, "We should set about trying to harness and utilize it with a view to preventing further disasters. With practice, it should be possible to detect patterns or peaks which might even suggest the nature and possible date, time, and place of a disaster."
Okay.
So he was kind of Minority Report trying to stop things happening.
It seems like proximity plays a role in this, because the people that predicted that the accident was going to happen were all locals in the town.
Some of them were around the country, but first ones were, I think I mentioned they were in like Lancashire and Plymouth. But yeah, no one got in touch from like
Zimbabwe or something. I was dreaming of coal.
I guess they didn't see the ad in the local paper though to write in.
That is a good point.
But yeah, trippy to think that if any time you had, the other night, I had a pretty bad dream of getting chased by someone with a knife.
All right, okay.
Horrible to think that in some part of the world, probably was someone getting chased with a knife somewhere.
That's a really good point, yeah.
And maybe I predicted that.
Wow.
That's dark.
That's pretty dark. Yeah, that's a dangerously realistic dream. Did you really have that dream?
I did, actually, yeah.
Who was it?
Bit of a stress dream.
Do you know
who was it
in the dream that was chasing you?
I mean, I don't want to call them out right here and now, but starts with Rory and rhymes
so it was
with
me?
Bowers.
I kept saying the podcast was late. The podcast was late. Running after you in the streets.
That's really how I see you. And as soon as the Bureau is launched, more than 20 warnings come through in the first 48 hours. But no incident happened afterwards to corroborate with those reports. But John isn't put off. He knows there are going to be some dud submissions, but thinks it'll be worth it in the end.
If only one major catastrophe could be shown to have been prevented by this means, the project would have been more than justified itself, perhaps for all time.
They got their first chance sooner than they might have thought. On the 21st of March, Alan Hentscher phones John Barker at 6 a.m. to share a premonition.
John, a plane is going to crash. I saw it. It crashed over mountains. 124 people are going to die.
Within 30 days, a plane carrying 130 people crashed into a hill in Cyprus. The next day, the headline read, 124 die in airliner.
So they didn't do anything?
Well, how could they know?
The dream! The premise! Isn't that the whole point of the goddamn mind force?
So he calls up every airline on planet Earth and says, I had a dream. They all hang up. You got to get a couple W's under your belt before people
working
pick
up
the phone. Yeah,
exactly. All right, that's fair. But at least, look, if you're going to assemble this brain squad of psychic wizards, you need to have then a team of people who can also enforce the protection that needs to be brought in to save the catastrophe from happening.
Sure.
Because otherwise you're just saying, yeah, I had a dream that a plane crashed and, yep, there it is.
You gotta start somewhere.
Ding, that's a W.
The premonition is so startlingly accurate, the newspapers even write about Alan Hensher, who phoned it in. He's a phone operator for the post office and began seeing the future after hitting his head in his 20s. He says that when he sees the future, I get a sick headache, a heavy, dull feeling, until it's as if a band of steel were around me head. John Barker was thrilled. Not exactly about the crash with 124 people dying, but this is just the first of several hits the Bureau will experience.
Wow.
The majority of which coming from this guy, Alan, and Kathleen Middleton, who we discussed at the beginning. Which kind of makes sense if you think about it. Like, okay, it's a really awesome idea, the idea of anyone in the world can call in and register a premonition. But realistically, how many psychics do we expect to be out there like Kathleen?
Yeah.
You know, it kind of makes sense that once he's found one or two psychics, they're going to do most of the reporting.
You put them in the roster, top of the roster.
Yeah.
I like the idea of him hitting his head, and that's how the premonitions start. Very in line with, you know, superhero narratives, you know?
Yeah.
Something befalling some sort of tragedy, and in the wake of that being gifted some sort of incredible power. Spider-Man being bitten by a radioactive spider, I believe. Wasn't the Hulk like trapped in a machine and that turned like the gamma rays, the radiation turned him into the Hulk? I believe that was something like that. You know, I like that idea.
Yeah. I mean, the annoying thing is by this logic, I should be able to see the end of time.
Right. Your whole life has been befalling tragedies.
My parents dropped me on my head. I bang my head as 3 times a day. I did, being honest, I did a couple of years back skateboarding. I fell over off a ledge and whacked my head
you
off
banged
a
your head,
bin.
Yeah.
And
a lot of these are just
out.
A lot of these are just banging your head.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, all like, Alan did, and
I know,
he can see the future.
He did it once, and it worked for him. I don't think if you banged your head once, you didn't get powers. You shouldn't keep trying to bang your head harder to get those powers. I think
I'm
maybe
not
try something
trying
else.
To bang my head.
Right.
It's just a byproduct of being a dumbass. It would be funny to think if I did get powers the first time, and then the second time I hit my head, it immediately wiped out any powers I had.
This is the equivalent of, like, you know, letting yourself get bit by a spider to try and become a superhero. Getting so poisoned, you spend 8 months recovering in the hospital, and the day you're released, you're like, all right, no big deal. It was the wrong spider. I need to go back into the jungle. And they're like, no, there is no spider. Yeah, I really think that one of these guys is going to give me the special juice.
I really think if more venom would have actually given me the special stuff.
It's a bad idea. If it doesn't work, I think call it quits. You know, if you stick your fork in the toaster and you get a pretty bad zap.
Fork in the toaster is actually...
Don't think you're going
to
get...
Be
no,
something
I'm saying
there.
don't get some... Don't
Can we
do
just
that.
Pause for a second? I need the bathroom, actually.
No, I know what you're going to go do, and I think
do
you're going to put your fork
here?
In the toaster. Why would you ask that? Why would you ask that if you knew the what I thought you were going to do was put a fork in the toaster?
I have a snack here, and I just feel like I would enjoy it with a nice... Fork.
That's a packet of gum. You're holding a packet of mint gum. Why would you want to eat
well,
that with
I'm a civilized
fork?
Guy. I'm not going to eat it with my hands, am I?
I'm just worried if I give you the fork.
I might want to toast the gum.
You're going
to... I might want to toast the gum. I think it's better hot.
So you're going to use the toaster?
If you don't mind.
And the fork?
The fork, I mean, if the gum gets stuck at the bottom of the toaster and gets all gummed up, I might try and scrape it out with the fork, sure.
I'm also worried that on the way to the toaster, you're going to bang your head.
I mean, is there something hard that would be good for that at like head height?
Okay, so you want to also bang your head and then stick the fork in the toaster?
I think at the same time, something interesting could happen. Yeah.
You know what? Go for it. I'm not going to babysit you anymore. I think you can. I think you should do it.
All right. Wish me luck. You're going to wish you had had a go with this toaster once you see my laser vision. You're blind. You have no pupils anymore.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
Alan Hensher and Kathleen Middleton the phones are ringing off the hook from these two. They're calling into the Premonitions Bureau. They both see a train crash on its way into London in their minds. Kathleen predicts a French maritime disaster, Alaskan floods, and tornadoes across the United States. The evening before Soviet cosmonaut Vladimir Komarov's return to Earth, Kathleen has a vision of a spaceman feeling a great deal of fear. And indeed, he died on re-entry to Earth the next day.
Wow. These are all pretty vivid dreams. Not just a hint of something. You know, I didn't feel like I was floating in stars or something. And yeah. I felt a bit sad. It's like I dreamt a Russian astronaut died in space.
I got his phone number if yeah. we want to call him. Even my dream about getting chased by a murderer, I don't really remember the details. My recollection basically stops at knife, run.
Right.
I'm kind of putting you put the pieces together in your mind after the fact.
My brother literally dreamed a week ago that I chased him down and injected him with poison.
So I'm a little in his ear, there can be only one.
So I'm a little bit worried if you had a dream where Dream Roy was chasing you with a knife and my brother had a dream that
you're Freddy Krueger.
What kind of impression am I giving off in my day-to-day life that this is how you all think of me in your dreams?
You're Freddy Krueger. You are a dream killer.
My dreams are all butterflies and chocolate rivers. And in everyone else's dream, I'm Michael from Halloween.
Yeah, he said I had a dream. It was a zombie apocalypse, but every zombie was Rory.
He said I injected him with a poison. And then it was one of those moments in a dream where once he was injected, like he can't walk.
Oh, you know, one of those, like, that's a good one.
And he was like, what did you give me? And I'm just standing there with a needle. So
that's so vivid.
Yeah, it's really weird,
my
isn't
goodness.
It? I hope we have people in the paranormal commune who say they listen to us sometimes when they're going to sleep.
Yes.
And occasionally we will pop up in their dreams. So hopefully their dream isn't you podcasting and me chasing them around the room with a knife.
I know, it's like in their dream, they walk into our podcast studio and you just put down the mic and are like, you immediately get a knife. I get a fork and a toaster and start chasing them. I would love to know if we have tried to murder you in your dreams. Let us know. Apart from Kyle, that wasn't a dream, brother. We did come for you after that nasty iTunes review. This is where things start to take a dark turn. Suddenly, the premonitions start getting personal. Alan Hensher calls up John one evening.
John, I've been worrying about you all day. Check your gas line. I think it might be leaking.
Dr. Barker dutifully checks, but there's no problem. but Henshire continues to give ominous warnings.
Have you a dark car?
Why, yes, Alan. It's dark green.
Be very careful. Look after yourself, Dr. Barker.
Beads of sweat start to form on John's forehead.
Is my life in danger?
Yes.
Henshire's forewarnings continued for more than a year before Kathleen Middleton started too. She tells him she's seen a vision of him with her deceased parents. She saw it for a week straight until she finally broke down and told Dr. Barker. Dr. Barker writes about these grim prophecies in a memo titled Some Interesting Predictions and a Possible Death Sentence.
It would be wrong for me to say that I was not frightened by a prediction of this nature. I suppose anybody who plays about with precognition in this way, to some extent, sticks his neck out and must accept what he gets. The important thing is, though, for this information to be recorded, so that if anything does happen, it should cause some interest and may stimulate others to continue this important work.
The most disturbing part is that during all of this, Middleton and Henshire keep making accurate prophecies. Kathleen knows JFK will be assassinated months before it happens, and calls three times on the morning it happens in a panic. I guess this is the problem, is how do you, like you say, they should step in and solve this problem. You can't call the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, heads up, you're going to get assassinated
today. By
the way,
today. Yeah, yeah.
Because the CIA will track the phone line and think you're the assassin.
Yeah, if you're tipping someone off about getting assassinated the day of their assassination, you're the murderer. You're the one who's going to do it.
There's only one explanation.
Yeah. I guess it's as you said, that's why you need to have so many 100% hits leading up to this that it becomes a point where people can't avoid it anymore.
Exactly. And sure enough, in the early hours of 18th August 1968, Kathleen wakes up breathless. She's sure that the feeling means death, and within a few hours, she'll receive the news that the same day, John Barker died from a brain hemorrhage at his home at the age of 44.
Whoa.
Rory, what do you think of all these mad predictions we've had so far?
Wow, this is pretty insane that they kind of predicted he was going to die. There was some weird stuff about a gas leak and asking about the color of his car, and that was a year before he died. Is that how far forward these premonitions can be?
God, hard to imagine, eh? I mean, sometimes in the movies, you know, it's a cool plot device when the person has a premonition that's like 40 years in the future.
Right,
you know,
right, right.
They're
yeah.
a child and they have a vision. And then when they're 45 years old, they're walking down the street and they're like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then a plane crashes or whatever.
How do these people, I don't even remember the dream I had last night. How do they remember a dream they had a year ago? I guess maybe they're logging it pretty well.
I think that's the idea. That's what dream people, not people in the dream realm, people who know about dreams. That's what they always say, is if you want to start lucid dreaming, you got to start writing down your dreams every morning and then your brain gets better at recalling them.
Yeah, dream people, as in the people in dreams, talk mostly about stabbing.
Knives.
And knives. Yeah, I've heard that it's good to keep a diary by your bed if you want to get into this kind of thing, so that you wake up in the morning and the first thing you do is turn and just write down whatever you can remember. Because isn't it like most dreams are forgotten within like the first 15 seconds of waking up? Something kind of crazy like that.
I think so. Especially now because of Instagram.
Yeah, of course.
If there was any hope of remembering a dream, now that like 60% of people on planet Earth, the first thing they do in the morning is look at their phone.
Yeah.
You're not remembering anything.
Sometimes I Instagram live waking up. Like it'll start with my eyes closed. I don't even remember starting it, the app open.
So all told, the Bureau of Premonitions received 469 entries. Some foretell horrifying tragedies laden with death and destruction, and others just claim to predict the winners of horse races. Some prophecies came true, most did not.
Those horse race ones actually sound pretty interesting. That's maybe, it's a different department, I think, for sure. Some sort of Wolf of Wall Street-esque department. Not really preoccupied with the conservation of human life, but more the conservation of the party. And making a little bit of profit.
The trouble is, Roy, there's some layers to this. You know, for one, it is astounding that any predictions came true through the Premonitions Bureau. But it doesn't exactly help that some of the practices were less than scientific. For one, the guy in charge of the whole thing is a full-on paranormal believer who is a little biased. Some even wondered if his death could have been equally explained by the nocebo effect.
What?
You know the placebo effect?
Yes.
There's a nocebo.
What?
A nocebo effect is when believing in something negative happening to you, even if it's not happening, has a real negative effect on you.
Right.
Rather than a positive one. So while writing his book, he visited tons of fortune tellers to try and predict his own death, despite his suspicion that he was creating a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
But as an example of how it works, in 2003, men in a trial were given placebos that would cause erectile dysfunction. And in the end, despite literally nothing happening to their health, 30% of the men's dicks stopped working.
Wow. Sorry, you said that there was like something to fix that? A nocebo?
Right. So in their case, I guess all they had to be told was, hey, nothing actually happened. Then it was all in their head and they were able to, their junk was able to start working
cool.
again.
Cool. But you said there was something that could fix it if it was happening.
I didn't say that.
You mentioned a pill? You said it. No, someone
they took a sugar pill.
Right.
Which didn't do
and
anything.
And that like gave the penis the energy to rise once more. Sorry, I'm just a little.
I didn't say anything like that.
I feel like maybe some of our listeners
on the penis thing at all. It's just like a little aside.
Yeah.
About how the nocebo works.
About how it works.
So anyway, we'll look at it, you know, some more premonitions. And,
I just want to know, is the nocebo, is that a over-the-counter thing or is that like a dark web sort of thing?
The point is that it doesn't do anything at all.
Right. Okay.
If anything,
but I'm just saying, you know,
it stopped people's dicks working.
Hypothetically speaking,
yeah.
If you know there was a listener out there that was having problems downstairs with the little,
I would just say, you know, talk to a doctor or something. You know,
okay. You're saying, but belief is what makes it work again.
Depends what the issue is, because
right, okay, but you're saying it's like Santa Claus.
We'll put
like
it
if
this
you
way,
close
you
your know. Eyes and just say like, rise, tiny soldier, and just repeat that, you're saying it could have a second wind. And the pills? I feel like you won't tell me where I can get the pills.
So in the case of someone who maybe has some kind of mental block, I guess that could work. You know, just taking, right. For someone like you, let's say, who...
Well,
you
know, not me. No. That's not me. It's not me.
You were out like BMXing and you sacked yourself on a rail. In someone like your case...
I told you that. It was in confidence that I told you that.
No
right?
kind of mantra such as, rise, little soldier, rise. I don't think I would ever... Your penis is in a cast,
I'm just saying it's pretty busted. I've been burned before, all right? I spent £1,500 on what turned out to be a bag of Skittles on the dark web, thinking that they would solve the problem, and they didn't, all right?
They burst into flames and literally burned my f***ing penis.
You're saying it's more of a mental barrier. For these people, not for me.
Yeah.
For these people
yeah.
in
no,
this,
not
in
for
this
you.
Case.
For
not
you,
for me.
It's a physical it's issue. But for other people...
For you, it's physical.
So it's definitely not proven that believing you're going to die will make you die, but it does make us think, what's more likely here? And this is a real question. A psychic paranormal prediction or a really powerful nocebo effect?
Right. I mean, this is the thing. Look, if you are so stressed out you're going to die, you're 100% convinced any day now you're going to die, all of a sudden you're not sleeping well anymore. You're up late at night smoking cigarettes. There's no time to cook. You're going to die any second. You're ordering cheeseburgers off the internet. Of course you're going to die. Your ticker's going to pop any
second. You're
sitting
there chanting to yourself, rise, little soldier, rise. Nothing's happening. You're stressed out of your mind.
Whereas, you know, if you're just living your best life, if you're out there, you know, getting up early, exercising, doing yoga, thinking you're an immortal, you've got an erection that'll last 7 hours. You've never felt better in your life. You're probably going to live longer.
Isn't that what the ad says? It's like, if your erection lasts longer than 2 hours, call a doctor.
That's a problem? I thought I meant it was working well. I need to cut back on those nocebos, man.
You eating dark web Skittles.
Yeah, you're like, those are still Skittles. They're just the sour ones. Oh,
they
sting.
Burn. You know, it probably is worth noting that even the foundations of the British Premonitions Bureau were as shaky as the foundations of that shaky mountain of coal above the town of Aberfan. Lots of non-psychic people also predicted that disaster, given that they saw 250,000 cubic meters of coal should not have been balanced precariously on top of a mountain above a school.
Yes.
Residents and officials of Aberfan raised their concerns 3 years before the landslide, but the National Coal Board ignored their complaints to keep the mine open. But the question remains, Rory, and we have to come down to a conclusion today. Can people really predict the future? Or do some people just have a little bit more intuition than others?
I'd love to have the hit record for this organization. Because as you said, it seems like a hotline where pretty much anyone and anyone could call in with any type of premonition they had. Presumably, you're going to get a lot more misses than hits.
I'll tell you right now, it wasn't good.
All right, okay.
Given that they got all of their predictions from two people.
Yeah, towards the end especially.
And they had 469 predictions. And how many did those two people phone in? Probably like a dozen each or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was a very bad rate. But I think that's okay. I think when everyone knows the paranormal is a subtle field of inquiry. It's not like a crazy obvious phenomenon we're looking for here. We're looking for the needle in a haystack that proves the exception to the rule.
Yes. Yeah. I guess it's only difficult because, you know, and I don't want this to be an indication of where I'm leaning towards a conclusion of this. But as the saying goes, if you throw enough shit at the wall, will stick.
Is that the saying?
It is, isn't it?
I guess.
Well, there's the shit hitting the fan.
Yeah.
Then there's throwing
then
shit.
Then there's the rule that if you throw cooked pasta against a wall and it sticks, it's properly cooked.
Is that a saying or just a thing
people
do? That's
a thing.
Oh, right. And then there's, you know, if you hold a buttercup up to your chin and it glows yellow, then you like butter. That's also a thing.
Sure.
Not relevant to the case,
and
of course.
I think if you open a bag of crisps upside down, it means you're in love.
Yeah, I think when we were in school, it either meant you were in love or gay. yeah.
Which, I mean, could be both the same thing.
Exactly. You could just be in love with someone from the same sex.
Which is really a beautiful thing.
It truly is. We were so far ahead of our time as 11-year-olds. We didn't even know it.
I'm so happy for you, brother, yeah. To see that you opened a bag of crisps upside down.
Yeah, there's a lot of sayings. I think specifically today we're going to throw our shit at the wall and see what sticks. I feel like that's maybe what was happening in these cases.
I'm going to take the lead on this one, Rory.
All right. I feel like we weren't into that then.
I have decided in the case of the British Premonitions Bureau,
mm-hmm.
that not all of the predictions landed, were true, were hits, but some were. And I do think that it's possible. I think that people have predicted the future. Now, whether that is pure chance is almost impossible to know. There is many people in the world, many events to predict. But I do think that uncanny, bizarre predictions have occurred. And I think that by definition, predicting the future is paranormal. And that's why I'm going to give it a yes seal of approval today.
Wow. Oh my goodness. I did not expect that from this case. Not to say it wasn't a great case. You know, there's just lots of conflicting sources.
Tread lightly.
Can you predict what my conclusion is going to be? Here's a way to test it.
Hold on, can I use the toaster though? Because I feel like that might help.
The toaster didn't work before. It definitely didn't.
I think if I put my tongue in the toaster?
No, I think that will...
Just cut out the middleman. Don't need the fork.
Cut out the fork? The fork's probably the only thing that kept you alive. The middleman took most of the charge.
Right. I'm just making the middleman my tongue.
That's like cutting out the body armor in a SWAT raid. Look, how about this? I'm going to make a prediction right now. I predict I'm going to win the lottery this week. I'm going to make that prediction right now. I feel like it's going to happen.
Okay.
Right. And I'm going to buy a lottery ticket. And if I win, then this case is a yes. The predictions are real. I did it myself. And if I do lose this week, it's going to be a no from me.
I mean, you got to know that makes no sense.
It makes a lot of sense
you
to me right now.
You have absolutely no established history as a psychic or someone who makes predictions.
No, I really think if you just for once let me have a bang on the toaster, things will be a little bit different.
And also, you're not predicting like... what's going to happen in the future. You're just saying what you want to happen. You're trying to change the future, not predict it.
You're trying to manifest. This isn't predicting the future. So all I'm going to say is you're going to have to tune into next week's episode of This Paranormal Life to find out whether humans truly can predict the future. And I actually might not be here because if I've won, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I'm not doing another goddamn episode of this podcast.
That kind of hurts to hear. So a bit of a hung jury today. We got one yes and one, I don't know what the f*** you want to call that, but one undecided.
Very true. Right. Well, I'll be decided. I'll be decided very soon.
Hope that is not too dissatisfying for our loyal listeners. And thank you so much to Tammy Nichols for sending that one in to us. At this part, thispartnormallifepodcast@gmail.com. Of course, thank you to Cami Toman for editing and Amy Grisdale for researching this episode. I do hope you enjoyed this week's episode of This Paranormal Life. We all wait with bated breath to see what Rory, well, how big he wins. If you follow him on Instagram and you see him on a super yacht with models popping bottles.
Oh, yeah.
Ignoring all COVID laws, you know that he's won a couple dollars for sure.
It's going to be, I got a good feeling, guys. Maybe it is going to be a double yes this week if the dollars start coming in.
But if you just cannot wait to get that result, and until next week's investigation, head on over to patreon.com/thisparanormallife, where from as little as $5 a month, you get access to every single bonus episode we've ever made for just $5. We've been making those things for almost 4 years.
Yeah.
And for just one fell swipe of your credit card for $5, get access to approaching 40 investigations.
And it'll be interesting to note that, you know, all of your Patreon donations this month and for, well, all of the following months go directly to Kit Greer, the poor, poor son of a bitch who didn't believe that I would actually win the lottery.
You haven't won it yet.
I feel, now that we've talked about it a little bit, I'm actually feeling really confident that this is going to happen. Actually, so confident that, you know what? I'm going to write you a check right now for $500,000.
I feel like you could be a little more generous if you're going to win, what, like the Euro Millions or something?
Just wait to the end of the...
I'll pocket that, though. I mean,
wait to the end of the week to cash it, though, because I'm a little dry at the minute.
I'll cash it whenever I see
fit. Well, no. I almost insist because I do need to wait for the fortune to come in. I got a couple other checks that need to be cashed a lot sooner than that one does, quite
frankly.
I mean,
if you want to... I could get you to sign something else if you don't mind. You could sign this contract to say that the Patreon is mine.
Well, I can sign that right now, brother.
And all right.
Boom.
Damn, this is a pretty profitable no episode for me.
Yeah, so if you want to go and support Kit on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/thisparanormallife.
That would actually be swell.
All money goes directly to this poor son of a bitch who
you can call me whatever you want. I've got a check for $500,000 in my pocket, which is more than you're going to win, by the way, because you ain't going to win shit.
That might have been a little too much. I might have got carried away a little bit. Do you mind if I cross off one of the zeros at the end of that check?
You only win $500,000 and sign all of it over to me.
Oh, shit. You get all the Patreon money and all of my lottery money.
Next week, I'm like hosting the podcast on my own. All proceeds of the GoFundMe go to per person of a bitch, Rory Pars.
Everyone redacts their donations. So come on, guys. You gave him the Kit. Oh, you assholes. I'll see you in your dreams with a knife, all right?
Yeah, I did it. Yeah, every night I do a f-ing satanic incantation to chase people in their dreams. Rory is right. The money from the Patreon directly goes towards making this show, making it possible for us to do. It is, weirdly, our job now, which is kind of unfathomable to the people who started making this a few years ago. And it's all possible through your donations at patreon.com. So if you enjoy the show, please head over there and check it out. Of course, there's lots of free content out there, not on Patreon. Head on over to youtube.com/thisparanormallife, where we post up clips, video clips of the episodes. All the links to all our social media and Patreon and everything is in the description of this podcast.
Check out the socials to see the video of me scratching the winning ticket live, all right? And then prepare to worship me like a god, because I'm not also rich, but apparently I'm psychic.
And Roy's going to be feeling pretty generous when he wins. So if everyone could just comment underneath that video, tagging you and a friend and whoever you want to donate $1,000 of the winnings. Rory is going to give away $1,000 to every person who comments on that video.
Hell yeah, brother. Plenty to go around. The tap is flowing. Everyone have a drink.
And in the last couple of weeks, we played our brand new single, Keep Running. And we implored you to pre-save it on Spotify. And so many of you came through. We're so thankful. It really, really makes a huge difference to us releasing the song. We really hope you liked it. I know some of you did. And we did promise that we would give away some merchandise to a few lucky winners who
pre-saved the song and gave us their email address. And I can announce those right now. So the winners are Saxon Freiner O'Quinn.
Great name.
Kat Ann Lorimer Taylor.
Another great name.
And Nicholas Montoya.
Woo!
So thank you so much for pre-saving, guys. I've got your emails, so I'm going to contact you about sizes for your prize. Thank you so much to everyone, though, who did enter and who took the time and pre-saved it and hopefully listened to it. Hugely helpful. The song is now out everywhere. Spotify, Apple Music, anywhere you get your music. We really hope that you love it. But that just about wraps it up for today. Hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Hope you tune in next week to hear all about Rory's winning ticket. We'll be back next week with a brand new paranormal investigation. See you then.